Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Len Cullum. Len is a woodworker living in Seattle, Washington, where he specializes in building Japanese-style garden structures, architectural elements, and furniture. A perpetual student of craft, he's also an occasional teacher and writer of how-to articles. And I first got to know Len when he was writing for Make magazine, when I was editing that magazine there, and I really loved the projects that he wrote and the tools that he used and his interest in Japanese woodworking. So it's a real pleasure to have Len on the show. How are you doing, Len?
I'm doing all right, Mark. Thanks for the intro.
It's wonderful to meet you, Len. I'm really looking forward to hearing about your current passions.
Oh, hi, Kevin.
So, Len, yeah, you wrote some really great pieces for Make magazine, and I'll try to remember to include links to them. But it was about making kind of Japanese style boxes and other like simple furniture and stuff, and just the kind of joinery and the tools. Just absolutely fascinating. So we're going to kind of get a peek into your workhouse through your descriptions of these tools, and some of them are quite humble tools, but pretty useful. So why don't we start by talking about stand cups? Stand cups.
Yeah, stand cups. So I do, whenever I need glue or something, I like to, pour it somewhere and then apply it with a brush or something. And also if I'm mixing finish samples and any other sort of liquid thing. And stand cups are just these perfect, they're low walled and wide and disposable. And
Are they paper?
Yes.
Okay.
Like a waxed paper or something like that.
To me, they look like what a Reese's peanut butter cup would be in, except that it's white instead of like the black color.
Right.
Just to give an idea of what it looks like.
Yeah, and much bigger.
Much bigger. Okay. I couldn't tell from the photo, and probably a little sturdier as well.
Yeah, yeah. But they're just like super useful to me. And anytime I need to control a bunch of little screws or do any sort of glue or finish, they're just kind of the ideal thing.
And you can buy them, they're pretty cheap. So do you just buy them like 100 at a time or?
Yeah, yeah.
And what kind of glue do you typically use for the stuff that you do?
It kind of varies, but mostly it's just kind of off the shelf, Loctite, wood glue. Standard stuff, sometimes exterior, interior, nothing too exotic.
Okay.
So one of the things that I have sort of switched to, I was used to be using disposable cups. I switched to silicon, little tiny mini silicon bowls. And what happens there is once the glue hardens or dries up or the epoxy hardens, whatever it is, I turn it inside out and it just rolls off
and pops
right out. And then I have a clean cup again. And it seems to be working really well so far.
Yeah, that's it's something that I've thought about in the kitchen, but not really in the shop. So
yeah, it works. And these are kind of they're the same size as these stand cups. They're little tiny mini bowls, and I think they're probably made for the kitchen. But I use them in my workshop.
That's a cool idea, Kevin. I have some of those, and I haven't really thought about using them for anything other than. And food, but you're right. Nothing will stick to those things.
Yeah, right. And you just turn them inside out.
Yeah,
clean. And then I have them. So I've been epoxies. You need something that would dry up, but most things do either dry up or harden.
Yeah, or you could just wipe it out with a
rag.
Since I'm almost out of stand cups, so maybe I'll give them a go.
Yeah, that sounds good. So. So tell us about this oil applicator and then why you like it and how you use it.
With Japanese tools, their edges are typically high carbon steel, and then there's often a iron component back or sides or something, and both of them are pretty prone to rust. And so the sort of traditional way to deal with rust is to apply camellia oil.
Why camellia oil? Why is it better than, I don't know, peanut oil or I don't know.
To be honest, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's what they apparently use for swords and everything. So
what's it made from?
It's pressed camellia? Camellia seeds. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does it have an odor?
No, not really. No strong odor or taste or anything like that. And it doesn't, it's not a drying oil, so it doesn't, it won't gum up over time. And after, especially after sharpening, because I sharpen on water stones, I need to do something to inhibit rust. And so normally I would just use a little spray bottle of camellia oil or sometimes a squeeze bottle. And it's just, you know, there's like oil vaporizing on whatever's behind it. And it's just a little messy and cumbersome, you know, minorly so, but still. And then one day, well, for years I've been seeing this little applicator on a website, but they never showed it with a cap off. And so I didn't know what the actual mechanism of applying the oil was. And I was visiting a tool store in Berkeley and looked at one and opened the cap. And it turns out that it's got a big felt tip on the top or under the cap. And it, so it works like a magic marker. And so you just kind of draw the oil on. And so there's no spraying. There's no, you know, wiping it around with a cloth or a paper towel or anything. It's just very direct and fast and easy. And also for my high carbon kitchen knives, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds nice. So it really eliminates the mess.
Yeah, the mess and the hassle. You know, when you spray it on, there's typically more in some spot than in another. And with the squeeze bottle, you get a lot on. So there's always sort of a paper towel involved and, you know, getting everything applied evenly. But with this, you just like draw it on like a marker, and it's great. I love it. It's it's one of my favorite things.
That's good. Tell me a little bit about this this tool company in Berkeley. I'm looking at the website you pointed to, and it looks like it's Japanese woodworking tools as well as gardening tools and stuff. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a great place. It's one of the few in the country that is super focused on Japanese tools. One of just a couple that I'm aware of.
Hida Tool, H-I-D-A.
Yeah, that's a Berkeley classic, been around probably from the 70s.
Cool.
And it used to be one of the only places you could get Japanese woodworking tools imported early. I think they were among the very first to do that.
Wow, this looks great. So you've been there, Kevin, I take it.
I have never been to the store itself, but their mail order catalog was a Whole Earth catalog staple for a very long time.
I'll bet. Yeah, it looks very Whole Earth.
It's a small shop, but it's really packed to the rafters with stuff, and it's worth a visit if you get over that way.
Oh, that looks so cool. I love it.
And it's nice that their stock kind of runs the gamut from very, very basic, up to like very refined and, you know, wildly expensive.
Mm-hmm. So I was looking up camellia oil a little bit, and I think one of the reasons why it is used on knives and stuff is that it's food safe.
Yes.
And it's actually used for beauty as well. So it's probably like a lubricant that has the right qualities and is also non-toxic.
And it's also used in when sawing, you can spray the sides of your hand saw to reduce friction. Uh-huh. And the same with
chisels. Yeah.
So pretty handy. Yeah. Oh, and also the applicator unscrews and you can like refill it, which makes it great as well.
Uh-huh. Cool.
That's good. Okay, cool. So let's see, what we have next here? A storage box.
Oh yeah, the Trusco box. So I found these the first time I was wandering around in Kyoto and sort of stumbled into this contractor's tool shop. And, you know, it was more contractor stuff, power tools and things, but there was a handful of hand tools. And I noticed this stack of little white boxes with some blue, shiny blue metal sticking out the ends. And I pulled it out and I was just kind of amazed by the paint color and the stamping and just the quality of the steel that comprises it. It felt like I found some new old stock from like the 1950s or something. You know,
it has a very retro feel to it, like an army ammo box in miniature or something.
Yeah, it feels like something that you wouldn't expect to have such good paint on it that you'd find in a garage buried under stuff. It's just the quality is really beautiful. I'm actually holding one in my hand right now. And, it's in its simplicity, it's just kind of ideal, the shapes and everything.
How big is it?
So the one I have is, it says 145 millimeters by 95 by 40. So,
14 by 9.
I'm glad one of us is good with that.
Yeah. 6 inches or something, 5.5 inches.
Right. And so that's the first one I bought. And when I looked at it, I just kind of put a back finger in that it was like going to be $30 or something just by the build quality. And I noticed a price tag on it that said 880 yen, which is like $8.20.
Yeah.
And I thought it had to have been a sticker that got picked up from something else that couldn't possibly be right. Or maybe, there was something on there that said it was going to add a zero. And so I checked and that's what they are. They're just like crazy cheap and so nicely built and beautiful. And just, who doesn't need a box to put stuff in?
Yeah. They look really cool.
And then there's also a larger one that I think is a 190 millimeter or geez, I don't know. Actually, I just found the receipt from the first one I bought. I spent about $40 on these boxes.
And they are generally the same color, the blue?
They come in silver as well.
Okay.
But I think the blue is kind of sexier.
Yeah, it's really nice looking.
What do you put in your blue boxes?
The one that I use all the time is full of all of my driver bits for my drill. Mm-hmm. All the kind of drill accessories. That's the one I carry around most. But then there's another one that's got some drawing stuff in it, and just I think there's some with some screws. Most of them are empty because they're just sort of like so great. they're more like gifts at this point. It's like, look at this amazing thing that makes it feel like I gave you something really expensive.
Yeah.
Scratch off the 880.
Exactly. Those are great. I love it. Okay. Well, tell us about Keyport slides.
Oh, okay. So the Keyport's been around for a while. I think I got mine in the first one in 2013, 2012 maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's a little sort of a tic-tac sized box that holds 6 keys, and they
like a door key for a door.
Yeah.
Car key.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. And you push a little button and slide the key forward and it comes out the end and slide it back in. And it just, it was apparently designed by a guy who was a motorcycle rider and didn't like the kind of jingle jangle of keys hanging off his bike. And I was riding at the time, and the idea really appealed to me. And
so this is so instead of having a key ring where they're on a ring and they're jingling, here they're in a little kind of case, and they're hidden. Normally they're just inside the box, and then you slide each key out as you need it.
Correct. And they also make accessories now for other stuff that can go in there. Yeah, so instead of a loose keys, now everything is kind of in this little package that is easy to pocket and carry, and it's quiet. And I don't know, it's just, I think it's a really beautiful solution for, you know, I don't know how much of a problem I'd call it, but I kind of hate to think that I would ever have to go back to a key ring at this point.
It looks like also that another advantage might be that the holder itself forms a kind of like a handle to the key. So you kind of have a bigger grip on the key to turn it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if it's an advantage or not.
It's a little something to get used to, you know, because the keys are, you know, normally when you turn a key, the key is right in the center. And so, you know, four of the keys are off the center line. At first it feels a little odd to turn this big thing with the one key sticking out, but it's a low bar to get over. And just over, you know, because of the sort of compact and quiet efficiency of the thing, I just think it's great.
Do you have any of these modules, like the flashlight or the multi-tool or the charging cable?
I don't. Knife? No, I'm pretty bare bones about it. I just have all keys.
How many keys will fit into one device?
There's a 6-key version and a 4-key version.
Okay.
I have the 6-key.
All right.
Although I'm thinking about switching to 4 because I have fewer doors to open lately.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, keys are going electronic in like my car. I don't even really use a key to open it. I mean, I have a fob instead of a key.
But it stays in your pocket, right? I mean,
yeah, right. And
to take it out.
Doors, home doors are going in that same direction as well.
It's interesting, yeah. So Len, we have a little bit of time. One thing I just wanted to do is point people to your website, shokunin-do.com. And it has examples of the Japanese garden structures and furniture that you've made, some of the shoji screens, furniture, really beautiful work.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I really recommend people take a look. I was looking at a table that you made from a piece of wood that had like a check in the wood, like a kind of a split. And you made these little black kind of butterfly bolsters. I don't know what you call those things to keep the split from growing, but it actually makes the thing look really cool. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they're butterfly splines or keys. Mm-hmm. Some people call them bow ties. And if I remember my Japanese right, arakita. But don't quote me on that. Okay. I'd have to look it up again. and I actually wrote a Make Magazine article on how to do that.
Okay, that's why it probably looks familiar to me.
What does shokunin-do mean?
Shokunin is a type of craftsperson who have sort of dedicated themselves to their craft.
I see.
And do is the path or the way, and so the path of the craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
Simplest terms.
Cool. Oh yeah, and here you actually have a menu item called Make that shows the different things that the projects that you had in there, including a Japanese toolbox, the butterfly spline, a little salt and pepper well, and a micro forge, which was really cool looking too.
Yeah, that was the first thing I actually sent that to you because I thought maybe somebody would want to put it on the blog or something. And I was shocked to get an offer to write an article back from you.
Yeah.
It's like, I've never written an article before.
It was so good. And it was a great article, beautiful photos. And you made one of these little forges yourself so that you could make old style Japanese nails, which I just thought was the coolest thing ever.
Right. Yeah. And I think what I was paid to write the article was more than I made on making the nails. So it all really turned out.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. That's cool. So we just in the last couple of minutes we have left, you have a book that you want to recommend about sharpening Japanese planes.
Right. There, when I started off doing this in pre-internet days, any sort of information about how to handle and work with Japanese tools was like gold. And often pretty esoteric, if I could find anything in English at all. And so Dale Brotherton, who's an excellent woodworker himself, Japanese-trained timber framer, has written kind of a comprehensive book on not just sharpening, but all of the setup and adjusting and sort of dealing with the Japanese plane. And there's still not a ton of information in English out there outside of the occasional article. And so it's pretty great. It covers a lot of stuff that I wish I had this book to reference 25 years ago or whenever it was I started.
Are you finding that YouTube has become more of a resource for learning how to do things like Japanese joints, etc.?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of information on YouTube now.
Do you have a particular YouTube channel that you favor, maybe as a beginner site?
I don't. I just, you know, kind of bop around once in a while when I'm looking for something in particular, but
yeah, when the situation calls for it.
Right. Right. I still kind of lean more into books and, the still image more than YouTube, more of the habit maybe.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to think of how to say this, but, are there Japanese language YouTube channels? In other words, they're not even necessarily focused on outsiders, but more.
Yes.
Towards yeah. Students in Japan.
Yeah, there's a lot of sites, and to be honest, most of the time when I am looking for YouTube stuff, I'm copy and pasting kanji and looking for information that that I don't really necessarily understand right. Language wise, but mm-hmm. I speak Chisel pretty well, so I can usually suss out what's going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in general, would you say, you were mentioning that, you know, 20 years ago, so there was pre-internet, whatever that was, be 30 years ago, there was very information about Japanese tools and woodworking was kind of scarce. Can you find most things out these days, or is there still kind of techniques and how-to that's still bound up in these national treasures and not really widely shared?
You know, I think most of the information is probably out there, and people are pretty good about wanting to share it, either, you know, with the purpose of sharing it or with from the purpose of showing them working. And so, you know, a lot of it is gleaning what you're looking at, I think, at least for me, that's where I tend to pick up the most things, you know, watching what's going on in the background, seeing what things are sort of just out of frame that will tell me things. But you know, when it comes to sort of the higher levels of craft, and I think it goes to any craft really, I think there comes a point where you have to be at a certain level to even know what the question is. You know, the farther somebody goes into their craft, the more subtlety they will start to understand. And, you know, there are guys that could point something out to me that I, as long as I've been doing this, I still wouldn't like fully understand the discoveries they're making because they've just got so much more behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense at all. So, I think there might be sort of an upper limit to what you can discover from a YouTube video without having put a lot of work in beforehand.
Oh, okay. Right. All right.
But there's like tons more out there than there was. And I should correct, before internet for me personally, mm-hmm. not before internet,
you know, okay. All right.
Yeah. Historically, but,
all right.
Most of my learning back when I started off was going to antique bookstore that only sold Asian books,
mm-hmm.
And looking at pictures and just trying to, sort of make sense of stuff that I wasn't able to read.
Uh-huh. This may be a little bit further afield, but I know that in, say, American woodworking, there are classes where you can learn how to make a chair from greenwood or learn how to make a shaker chair, like workshops or classes and things. Are there similar type things in Japan itself?
Oh, I'm sure there are. there's actually... Dale Brotherton, who wrote the sharpening book, actually teaches around there. I think there's one or two times a year that he teaches a timber framing class, mm-hmm. Here in Washington. I think you might struggle a little bit to go to Japan and take a class unless you were semi-fluent. But I honestly couldn't say for sure. There may be more mm-hmm. out there than I know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know either. But
it'd be great, though.
Yeah,
great. I would love to take some kind of woodworking workshop.
A joinery class. You could do 15 joints by the time you're done.
Yeah, that'd right. be great.
my dream is to go over there and take a hammer making class.
Cool. Hammer making.
Yeah, I think that there's got to be a lot of knowledge and depth in making hammers because mm-hmm. they're so simple.
Yeah. They're so simple. I love that.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe when Japan opens up again, although from my friends in Japan, they were saying it's been the most awesome time to be in Japan because there were no tourists.
Oh, yeah.
One of my friends kind of, I wouldn't say got stuck there, but he spent the last 3 months in Kyoto, which he had to himself. Literally was going around and he was the only one walking around photographing in Kyoto. And it was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, wow. It's like typically, like, I think Golden Week is in early May and it was shut down. So, it must have been incredible.
So once it opens up, that'd be a great time to go take a class, I guess.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Well, start signing up now.
Yeah.
Lynn, thank you so much. This has been so much fun hearing about the tools that you worked with. And like we said, you can go to shokunin-do and check out Len's creations and some of his instructional articles that appeared in Make Magazine. Len, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Mark and Kevin. This is great.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools Show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. That's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors. We pay for transcribing costs. We pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob K., Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.